From LibertyCast Studios and the Defenders of Capitalism Project, here's another Capital Idea from your host, Mike Williams.
Mike Williams here, defender and champion of laissez-faire capitalism. Welcome back to another episode of Capital Idea. This is Mike Williams, your host, with my co-host Mitch Whitus. This is the Defenders of Capitalism podcast, and we are talking about freedom, individual rights, the proper role of government, all things capitalism. Rights is an important concept. But today we have an interesting topic. There's a proposal put out by one of our favorite pro-capitalist senators, right?
That's right. Mr. Bernie Sanders, very pro-capitalist.
What is Bernie up today? What is he proposing with this new idea?
Well, this has made the rounds on the news recently, so I think a lot of people have probably heard about it. But Bernie Sanders has introduced the 32-Hour Work Week Act. He introduced it March 13th. And we should say, this bill has been introduced in the House before, so the idea has been floated around, but it has become a much bigger issue because of Bernie Sanders' following. It's become a much bigger issue now in the news, and it's become a topic of more serious consideration.
Sure, yeah. So what made him decide on 32 hours versus, like, why not 15? Why not do a 15-hour work week?
Well, I think that's the crux of the argument, right? And I think we should probably get there. But according to Bernie Sanders, and this is straight from the one-pager produced by Bernie Sanders' office, so we're hopefully not putting words into his mouth. This is how he argues for the bill. But the idea is that we're going to federally mandate that the standard work week goes from 40 hours to 32 hours over the course of 4 years, so a gradual step down. So they're going to lower the maximum hours threshold for overtime compensation for non-exempt employees. So in other words, you'll get to the point where you can work more than 32 hours, but you're going to get paid overtime to do that.
That's right. That damned capitalist who's paying your salary has to cough up more money, right?
That's right.
If he's expecting more than 32 hours of work, by God, he better pay for it at time and a half or better than that, right?
Well, and that's the next part of the bill, is that it's going to require pay at time and a half for work days longer than 8 hours, and overtime pay at double a worker's regular pay for work days longer than 12 hours. So if you're in the healthcare profession, for instance, where you're working over 12-hour days, that could be very lucrative, I guess. But the other thing that this is going to do too, and I should say what this would do, no chance right now that this is going to pass Congress, but it would also, he says, protect workers' pay and benefits, essentially so that even though they're working fewer hours, they're still going to get paid the same amount that they do now.
So less work, but same pay is what he's kind of going for there.
That's right.
So why, now you just said that you don't think this has a chance in hell in passing Congress. Is that because people just, you know, there's enough people who are on the right, on the conservative side, who are saying, you know, Bernie's not a capitalist and he doesn't get it in the first place, and so we're going to vote for anything that Bernie comes up with? Or do you think the right or the Republicans really do understand how this is not good? Why do you say it has no chance of passing?
I think probably a combination of things that you said, Mike, but I think there are also Democrats who are maybe the more traditional, I don't know, we used to call them blue dog Democrats, who also don't think that this is a good idea. So I just don't think it has the support, but I do think, of course, there's a lot, especially on the House side, a lot of Republicans would say, you know, we're not going to vote for something that Bernie Sanders has proposed.
Yeah, he proposed it, so it must be bad.
Exactly. But let's say, obviously, I don't know that this would be true, but I could imagine that if Trump proposed a 32-hour work week, suddenly a lot of Republicans might suddenly be making arguments for it on
Fox
News. Right,
right, and probably Bernie would be against it.
And then Bernie would be against which goes back to our tribalism.
Yeah, that's right, That's a big theme that we talk about on our podcast all the time, is that we got to get away from this tribalism, collectivist arguments. But so is there anybody out there that you're aware of who's ever proposed increasing the minimum hour work week? Like, we need to go from 40 to 80. We're not working enough around here.
Not anybody who wants to be reelected.
That doesn't fly.
I don't think that flies. I think that'd be a hard sell.
Nobody wants to work more than they are right now.
No.
Well, if they are, they probably are already working, they're entrepreneurial, and they're doing their thing, and they're just trying to ignore what Congress says in the first place, right?
Yeah. Well, and I would say for me, like, I like to work, but boy, that'd be great. I'll do a 32-hour work week, and if I work 40 hours, that's 8 hours of time and a half pay, right? I mean, that sounds great.
So you'd go for it. If your government and Congress succeeded in enforcing your employer to do this, because it'd become the law, right? And they'd say, okay, to comply, you'd be like, okay, great, I'll do that. I'll take more time off.
No, I don't know that I'd say, okay, great. But what I also recognize is that for my entire life, I've operated under the 40-hour work week,
right.
which was also federally mandated. And so by accepting that, I have accepted federal force.
Yeah.
So I am trying not to be hypocritical.
Well, you know, that's the thing is you're right. The whole culture is based on this. In fact, I don't know. I think I've talked to you about this before, Mitch, and this is kind of a rabbit hole. So cut me off if I go too far down it. But, you know, I've gone through this program before called the Strategic Coach, and it's a life coaching, business coaching thing for entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy in Toronto who I went to for a number of years, his name is Dan Sullivan. He talks about entrepreneurial time or real time in his mind versus bureaucratic time. And bureaucratic time, have I talked to you about this before?
I think we've talked about it a little bit privately.
So it's relevant a little bit to the topic. So bureaucratic time is that sort of like it's constructed by someone else for you. And you know, he makes the case is that it was a way to go from, you know, an agrarian society to a industrialized society to say, let's make things more uniform and have people, you know, the division of labor is working, but people are gonna have like more factory type jobs, and we gotta organize people, their work and society around a work week and weekends, and you know, this is just gonna make more sense. And that's how it culturally happened. You know, he's just justifying how it happened, but he's saying that's not the real world. You know, for most of humanity, people worked a lot more than 40 hours.
Yeah.
And certainly, you know, if you worked in the fields, if you worked in agriculture, even if you were, you know, the farmer, the person in charge, maybe if you were like a, you know, southern plantation owner, life of leisure person, you didn't work that much. But most of those guys even put in more than 40 hours a work week.
Well,
you know,
even if they're a lot of people unwillingly working for them as well.
That's right. That's right. Absolutely. Yeah. But so his point is that we've now graduated to a time period where more people can actually control their time. And that's a good thing because we're using our minds more. The knowledge worker and the microprocessor and the industrial revolution morphing into the information economy means it's more about results and more about like, what can you do with your mind versus what can you do with your body and your hands and your, you know, quote, physical labor.
Yeah.
So he's saying, you know, he coaches people on entrepreneurial time, which totally blows away the whole 40-hour work week.
Right.
But one of the things he does recommend is that people, if they have control, and they should take control if they can, to whatever extent they can, of their time, instead of it being imposed upon them, they should make sure they block off free time first.
Right.
So the number one thing in terms of your time priority planning is to say, well, when do I get free time?
Yeah.
When do I take this vacation? And he has a whole structure of saying, you know, free time needs to be really, truly rejuvenation time, which may not be a vacation.
Right.
You know? I mean, a lot of people go on vacation and then come back and say, I need a vacation for my vacation.
It's like sharpening the saw time.
Exactly. Exactly. That's the whole concept is making sure you're rejuvenating so you can be more productive and you can feel like your life has the kind of purpose that really should. But that's aside. I mean, you're right. Most of society, if you're an employee, you don't have entirely the control over your time. Your employer says, okay, we do a 40-hour work week, and they comply with that whole bureaucratic system. And it's interesting that he's now saying, Senator Sanders is saying, well, let's change the bureaucracy of it all. We have this standardized, you know, basically by force in some way, complying with a 40-hour work week, and we should just change that. We should change that because it's more just and fair to the worker, right?
I think in some ways, Bernie Sanders isn't that crazy, right? Because he points out, hey, the 40-hour work week, it came about in 1940 due to the Fair Labor Standards Act.
Yep.
That's when we set it at 40. We can set it at 32 now. There's precedent for this.
Yeah.
So, you know, in that way, Bernie Sanders is not wrong.
No, and I think a lot of people, especially a lot of people who don't think about their time necessarily or having control of their time, they're going to say, yeah, well, that, you know, they did it once and they did it a long time ago. So why not change it?
And right.
Why not make it better for all of us? Because, you know, Lord knows we could always use more leisure time or more free time or time that we could do what we want versus what's being told to us in the impersonal way that a capitalist is forcing us to do their work. We're hired to do anyway. I mean, that's sort of the narrative, right?
Well, and you spoke a little bit about we're entering a world now where people are using their minds more, people are more productive. And Sanders actually says this when he's advocating for the bill. He said, you know, there's been all these technological advances and productivity has increased by 400% than productivity was in 1940. And so, look, we just need to reflect reality now. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that he talks about, and we hear Bernie Sanders talk about this a lot, he is always on message. You know, the problem is that even though there's been all these technological advances and productivity increases, you know, the average worker, the working Joe, has not seen their fair share of that wealth creation. So that's the other point that Sanders brings up, is that what he says is that weekly wages for the average American worker are actually lower than they were 50 years ago when you adjust for inflation, and CEOs are now making nearly 400 times more than what their employees earn. So Sanders is saying, let's go to this 32-hour work week, and that way workers can start enjoying more of their time, and we can equalize some of the benefits that they have not received in comparison to the company leaders.
Right, right. It's an inequality argument, right? It's saying, wait, there's an unjust system here. It's an injustice for the hourly employee to not benefit. And again, you made the point, and I think it's important for people to know, you know, okay, maybe your salaries have gone up or your hourly wage has gone up. But if you adjust for inflation, maybe it hasn't gone up as much as certainly maybe CEOs. And that's what he's trying to point out, is wait, this is an unequal distribution of the profits and the income that the company is creating, right?
Right. And then the other thing that he brings up, and this is less about the equality argument, but he points to a few studies. One of them was conducted in the UK recently. And what this study looked at was people who switched to a 4-day work week. And what they found in this study is that doesn't seem to affect productivity. The company's revenue either remained the same or increased even, and workers were reporting less burnout. So in other words, it's, you know, according to Bernie Sanders, this sounds like a win-win-win all the way around, right?
Yeah, yeah.
No downside. And another argument that I've heard a lot of people make is they said, well, hey, you know what? Back when the arguments around the 40-hour work week were being thrown around, it was Henry Ford who actually said that, you know, it is high time to rid ourselves of the notion that leisure for workmen is either lost time or a class privilege. So in other words, give people time off. And Henry Ford did help bring about the 40-hour work week, but he actually implemented it years before the federal government did.
Yeah, a couple of decades, right?
Yeah, at least a decade. So, you know, there's the argument that the federal government isn't actually driving change. It often just follows change.
Yeah, that's a whole different thing that we've emphasized on other episodes before, is, you know, whether the government is actually truly leading or following some other, you know, whether it's environmental cleanup or healthcare or whatever it might be, they're usually lagging and wanting to take credit for it, and taking credit by using force to make people to do things. But you're making, it sounds like you're making a pretty good argument in favor, or at least doing a steel man, not a straw man, but a steel man argument to say, hey, this is Bernie's argument and we should take it seriously.
Well, I'm trying to be fair about it.
Yeah.
Because there are millions of people who think that this is a good idea.
Yeah.
And so I don't want to just poo-poo the idea out of the gate, because I think we should look at it based on its merits.
Yeah, absolutely.
And when you describe it the way that we've been describing it, hey, it sounds great, right? People are more productive. CEOs are making a hell of a lot more money than they have before.
Yep.
And 4-day work weeks seem to actually work. So let's do it. Yep. Right? That's what Bernie Sanders is saying.
Yep, absolutely. So what's our answer to that? What do you think our answer, how should we go about, like, taking a crack at this, looking at it objectively, maybe giving it another viewpoint? What's the best way to dive into that? I think one of the things that we should point out is how hard it is to measure improvement in living standards. I mean, our inflation, you mentioned it, you know, inflation adjusted wages for people are not necessarily growing as fast as they might want to, or certainly maybe not as fast as the CEO pay has been. And I think there's some truth in that, but we don't really know how to measure how much better people's lives are, even if their wages adjusted for inflation aren't that much better, because we can't measure the value of all the new innovations that have happened, right? I mean, you and I were talking earlier, you bought a new vehicle recently, and you and I are marveling, at least I do, and I think you do too, about the usefulness of having a Bluetooth player in your car, right?
Oh, yeah. Listen, I mean, when I test drove my new car, I didn't know how to turn it on. I said, you have to press a button? You know.
That may say something about the both of us, you know, and our willingness to have old technology and not necessarily need the most. This technology has been around for a long time.
Look, I'm 95 years old. I admit that. I was driving an 04 Jeep, you know, so I'm not exactly ahead of the times.
But it's a really cool technology, and it has been around for a while, even though you're a slow adopter in this
just
space.
Discovering it. I apologize.
But it's made your life in the last, you know, I don't know, several weeks or months that you've had the new car. And certainly since I've had this technology, and I've had it for years, I really do value this thing because I can be so much more productive if I want to make calls or if I want to, or even my leisure time, if I want to listen to books, you know, leisure books, novels, you know, fiction type stuff, or if I want to be productive and listen to periodicals, podcasts like this one. Hopefully maybe some of our listeners are right now in the car taking advantage of this Bluetooth. It's not that new.
It sounds like witchcraft. I mean, I'm just discovering this. It's very crazy to me, but
think of how much better your life is now that you have Bluetooth in the car and you're listening to the Defenders of Capitalism on the way home.
That's
or listening to, you know, a wonderful piece of music through your Apple, your iTunes or something like that. You've got so many different options of things you can consume now in your car without jeopardizing your safety. It's a wonderful piece of technology, and that makes people's lives better and potentially more productive if they use the tool. You know, obviously you can use it to just listen to crap, or you can use it to consume things that'll really enhance your life. That's just one example of how our lives are so much better. And there's literally thousands of examples of that kind of thing where we are that much better off, even though our salary may not be that much better off.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's spot on, Mike. We like to complain about people and things and events on this podcast, but we are also living in the most prosperous time in human civilization.
Absolutely.
If you could pick a time to be born, you'd want to be born now.
Now, there's some people who wouldn't, right?
No, some people wouldn't.
But they're likely, and at least in my view, maybe you would share this, but in my view, they're likely delusional. I mean, there are people who, you know, sort of have this view of romanticizing what it might have been like 100 years ago in a more agrarian society, or maybe, you know, 200 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
In a more agrarian society, not realizing how difficult physically and emotionally that would be to live in that time period where most of your attention, most of your energy is purely on subsistence, you know, trying to say, can I scratch out a living? Can I grow enough food and so forth to just feed my family?
I mean, I love ancient Rome, and I think sometimes, boy, it'd be nice to go back and live in those times. And then I realized, unless I was the emperor, I mean, I'd probably be on the side of the road dead from the plague.
Right.
You know,
most likely. Of us wouldn't last.
No, or I would have died as a child, which a lot of people did.
Absolutely.
So we live in phenomenal times. And I think also, I don't want to get into all the technicalities of how wage growth and inflation and the interaction of those is calculated, but a lot of great, more liberty-minded think tanks have also done a lot of studies on how our wage is growing, what's happening with inequality. And I do think it's not really as cut and dry as Senator Sanders makes it sound in the argument for this bill either. In fact, there was a recent study I heard recently that actually we've been talking about growing inequality, you know, over the past 30, 40 years. Well, there's some talk that actually that might have been overstated. And that can probably be a future topic on.
Yeah,
on
we
one of
we
our
should
podcasts.
Talk about that. In fact, you know, I don't know if you've seen the book by Senator Phil Graham, who is no longer a senator, but I can't remember the title off the top of my head, but it's basically something to the effect of the myth of inequality. And he does a really good job. And again, this is a little bit of a rabbit hole. It's taken away from the central point about Senator Sanders, but it's relevant because when you take into account transfer payments by our government, there really is very little inequality that's happened because there's a lot of people who actually do relatively well by getting transfer payments. Now, those transfer payments could be in the form of entitlement programs. They could be in the form of actual welfare. They could be any number of different ways that our government says, well, we need to make up for this. And we do.
Yeah.
And those people actually, especially when you take into the fact that they're not paying, at least on a net basis at all, really into the system. They're not paying taxes. Now, again, it's not necessarily popular for people to to say that, but the facts are, and this is our assertion, is that all progress does start with the truth, and it's worthwhile looking at the facts. The facts are that that inequality argument doesn't hold water when you look at all the relevant information.
Well, and also just continuing down this rabbit hole a little bit, Mike, like even in Colorado, we have this thing, TABOR, the Taxpayer Bill of Rights. And in the past few years, we've had some big refunds through a variety of factors. But this year, we still received our refund, but the legislature decided that, well, you don't actually get the, because the idea in TABOR is that when the government doesn't spend that, basically inflation adjusted budgeting and all that sort of thing, you know, the government will refund your money to you.
Right. They've taken in too much relative to all the other factors.
Yes.
So we're refunding it.
Right.
It's yours.
But what happened this year is, oh, we get a refund, but it's a flat refund to everybody in the state of Colorado. So in other words, you're not really getting, if you're a higher income earner, you're not actually getting your higher, you're not getting all your money refunded.
Right.
In fact, a lot of that money became, as you said, transfer payments.
Yep.
And so I think transfer payments are all around us in ways that we don't even realize.
Yeah, and that's the hard part is that sometimes people, that requires another level of thinking to be able to say, okay, well, what's really going on here? I can see the surface. You know, these guys are making more money than I am. But when you take into account that kind of government force and government action that says we're going to equalize or we're going to favor some groups or we're going to try to bring up the bottom in some way or another by writing checks or by printing money and writing checks to them, you have to take that into account. Now, you might say that's just and moral or that's the way it should be, but you got to admit that that's what's going on.
That's what's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think when we're talking about arguments against Senator Sanders and we've talked about tribalism, I want to talk about an argument that I think is very predictable and that I don't think is actually a very good argument that's being used to try to, you know, say that this is not a good idea. And so, of course, that came from the Republican side of the House trying to explain why they won't support this, which, by the way, I hope they don't support it. But the argument that, for example, Senator Bill Cassidy, he's a Republican from Louisiana, you know, he said something to the effect that paying workers the same wages for fewer hours, it's going to force employers to pass the cost of hiring more workers along to consumers. So in other words, you know, it's going to make your meals more expensive because, you know, businesses have to pass on all this money. And I think we hear that a lot from quote-unquote conservatives.
Yeah, that's always the message, right?
Yes.
They're trying to argue at a certain level versus the moral level. And I think that's where you're going.
That's where I'm going with that. I just don't think it's a good argument because, one, I think a lot of people would say, well, if it means that people are living better lives, and that's what I think we all want, or at least all of us rational people, no matter what ideology you identify with, we all want people to live better, more fulfilling, free lives.
Yeah, I would kind of agree with that. Although I might say, well, which people? I mean, I care about some people more than other people. So I would say, when you say we want all people to be better off, well, yeah, generally I do. You're right. I'm benevolent in that way. But then if you take it to another level and you say, well, this is going to have some impact to you, I would say, well, which people do I want better?
Yeah, I understand. But I think in general, you know, if I'd say, oh, well, I've got to pay, oh, maybe a few pennies more for my Chipotle burrito. But, oh boy, that person behind the counter, they've only got to work 4 days a week now. So that's great, right? And so that's why I think you have to focus on the moral argument here, because the financial argument, it just doesn't hold a lot of water in my mind.
Well, I think it holds water, and I think it's really important for economists and people who study this stuff to point out those kinds of implications. And you're right. There are plenty of, quote, conservative Republicans who will point out the problems with this kind of bill and say, look, you don't realize what you're doing. There's secondary and tertiary consequences down the road, and you got to pay attention to that. And it likely, and they're right. I mean, you wouldn't argue with their conclusion. I mean, this kind of a bill would make all of our lives more expensive.
Yes.
I mean, it is going to be inflationary. It would be inflationary in the sense of saying, just the Chipotle example. I mean, if people, with all other things being equal, if Bernie Sanders could wave his law wand and forced all employers to say, you can't make people work more than 32 hours without paying them a lot more money, then costs for everything would go up.
Right.
That's
a
fact.
And I think what I meant by saying it doesn't hold water is that we hear that argument over and over on all these proposed government programs. It's like, okay, I think people get tired of hearing it. Like, okay, and what? But that's not to say that math and statistics also can't make a good argument against this bill. And one thing I wanted to mention is that somebody who has advocated against the bill is somebody named Liberty Vittert. Hopefully I'm getting the last name right. A statistics professor at Washington University in St. Louis. And Liberty said, great name, by the way, there is no statistical evidence to merit a nationwide mandate of a 32-hour work week. If it works for some companies in some sectors, that is great, but it cannot be applied to all sectors. And what that testimony is in part designed to conflict with is, you know, that study in the UK that said everybody was great after a 4-day work week. Basically, what this professor is saying is, actually, there are some industries where more flexible work is, that's okay. But there's a lot of industries, like manufacturing, where actually it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense economically.
Yeah. Well, and the big thing on this, underlying this argument, I mean, Bernie Sanders is making more of a moral argument. He's saying, we have the society now where we can help the people live better lives, the workers live better lives by reducing their weekly hours, how much they have to work, and they can have a richer, better life. So he's making a moral argument. But what it boils down to, and this is important for people to realize about any kind of understanding of capitalism and certainly a defense and championing of the proper role of government and having a free society, is that this is basically a philosopher king argument. I mean, this is, if you go back to your Plato and the Greek philosophers and Plato saying that we need the philosopher kings, we need people who are smarter than us. Well, that's what Bernie's inserting himself as. He's saying, look, I'm smarter than the rest of society, and I think we should use the power of government to force this upon businesses versus, you know, Liberty's Vittert, or however you say his name, you know, his argument saying this might work in some areas, might not work in other areas, but let people freely choose that. I don't know if he really does make that choice or that argument, but he's saying it doesn't work in all areas. And that's part of the problem, is that how would Bernie Sanders know what will work? Well, that's what I originally said. Why not make it an 80-hour work week? Yes. Why not make it 15? How does he know what is the proper number of hours any number, any employee or any industry ought to implement?
I completely agree. In my mind, government should not be mandating how employers and employees interact with one another, other than to uphold law, make sure that fraud is not happening and things like that. But the discussion and the relationship between the employer and the employee and how many hours a week are being worked, that best happens at the local level, because the philosopher kings that Bernie Sanders might imagine himself to be one of those, they can never have the knowledge to know how many hours a week is actually the best for a person to work. And that can even change on the individual level week to week. In my job, there are some weeks when maybe I should work 57 hours and 22 minutes. Maybe that's the ideal hours for me to work one week. And maybe I should work 23 hours and 2 minutes the next week because of just the work and hopefully the value creating opportunities that I need to pursue that week.
Right. And the position that we take that is pro-capitalism is that it's got to be based on a voluntary trade. Now, Bernie's argument would, I think, be you call it voluntary, but it's there's such a big difference in power. You know, these people who are working hourly wages, they don't have the power and they can't really advocate for themselves enough to say what is just. And so I need to be the defender of that little guy, right? I'm the one who's inserting myself because I'm protecting that little guy. The little guy's too stupid or doesn't have enough power to advocate for what is really what he's worth, right? Yeah. And it's a paternalistic view. It's a paternalistic view of the world that's saying, you know, those workers out there are just not smart enough or powerful enough to be able to advocate for what they want, not realizing that this kind of system where people can freely trade their labor, in this case, has increased the actual standard of living wherever it's been tried by, you know, so many thousands of percent better than a philosopher king system that says we're going to centrally control it from Washington, from Bernie Sanders' perch, right, you know, as the philosopher king.
And the benefit from that voluntary trade, I think, Mike, is that when Sanders says something like, well, look at AI. AI has the ability to even more tremendously increase productivity, which I hope it does. And so he said, why not go down to a 32 work week now? But with the voluntary trade, organically, we can figure out as individuals and, you know, as a society as a whole, we can figure out now, okay, now voluntarily, let's say, wow, AI has actually reduced my workload tremendously. I actually only need to work 5 hours a week. Yep. And that'd be great if that's what you want. But for other people, it might be, well, I still need to work 45 hours a week.
Or I still want to work.
Or I still want
to. That's part of the thing is that a lot of this is, and again, I think it's worthwhile to point out the approach that Dan Sullivan, the strategic coach guy, says about, you know, people who think about just purely needs and think about like, they usually come at their economic behavior from a lacking, you know, like the traditional definition of economics is, you know, about scarcity versus thinking, wait, yeah, there is scarcity. There's temporary scarcity right now. I don't have everything I want right now, but how do I produce more? How do I make the pie bigger? How do I think in terms of abundance? And that's what entrepreneurs typically do. And we are moving, I think, culturally in one sense, more toward because of the technology and the innovations that have gone on, and whether you call it AI or any kind of technological empowerment of people, where they can see, well, I can use this tool too. I can use my mind too. I don't have to use my labor. More and more people are thinking more freely about their time, and they can decide what my values are. Instead of having Bernie decide what the value of my time is worth, I can say, let me go to my employer and tell them what the value of my time is worth, and I can negotiate on my own behalf. I don't need a parent figure or a philosopher king figure to tell me what I'm worth. I will, and again, like as you pointed out, whether it's Bernie Sanders or the Federal Reserve or any central controlling government unit that's trying to take into account so many different variables. I mean, there may be plenty of people out there who don't value Bluetooth in their car like you or I do, and they want to buy something that doesn't have that. And they don't want to pay the price for it. There's all kinds of different subtleties in terms of how we value things, and not only subtleties in how we value things, but from day to day, like you said, from week to week. One week you might say, or your employer might say, look, Mitch, I really need you to put the 57 hours and 48 minutes or whatever you
call it.
I need that this week. And next week, you know, maybe we're more flexible. I mean, it's so difficult to put all that into any kind of central repository of wisdom, so to speak, to be able to cookie cutter it out and say, everyone's got to get, you know, 32 hours a week, or here's what we're going to do differently. You know, we're going to use force to enforce this 32 hours. That doesn't take into account human nature and the varying values that people have from week to week or day to day and how they want to use their time.
I think, Mike, this is the perfect representation of freedom versus force, right? So I think we would both agree, and most rational people would probably agree, in the future, it would be great if we could eliminate so-called, you know, menial jobs, if those could all be automated, if you have the opportunity in the future to only work at jobs that you find personally fulfilling for as many hours or as few hours as you want. I hope we get to that point, and you have as many hours for leisure and for self-betterment as you want, or if you want to spend all your time working, you can do that. I hope we get to that point.
Well, but when you say get to that point, I mean, again, maybe I want some menial work. I mean, there are people, I know people personally, and I know myself even, there are times when I go, you know, I don't want to think at the level and expend the energy that I need to in my own day-to-day job. I don't mind just doing some physical chores.
Well, yeah, and that would be their choice. I guess I'm not talking about people doing physical chores or anything, but, you know, people having to do jobs that they hate, right? It'd be nice if that's all automated, and I hope we get there. But the point is, with freedom versus force, with freedom and voluntary transactions, it allows innovation and it allows an evolution of these things to occur so that in the end, really, I think that we can all find out ways to make ourselves better off. When you use force and a top-down approach and say, we had a 40-hour mandated work week, now we have 32, it constrains, it reduces innovation, it puts too much in a box.
It reduces learning. People don't learn. I mean, the thing is, it's so dehumanizing to have that kind of system versus a system of mutual voluntary trade like we advocate for. And the thing is that people should be able to, as I've said before, is, you know, capitalism is for grown-ups. And what part of what that means is, in a free society, you have to ask yourself, you have to say, well, what is important to me? What kind of work does fulfill me? Versus being told, you're going to do this. You know, here's the job you're going to have. You don't need to think for yourself. You're going to be told what to do. Versus saying, I got to do the hard work of figuring out what I really get something out of. What, you know, how, what fulfills me? How do I define fulfillment in my work life? How much do I want to work? How, you know, what gives me energy and fulfillment? And it's a responsibility of an adult to define that for themselves. No one can really do it for them. So that's part of what it means to actually be an independent agent, a free person in a free society that's saying, okay, I've got to grow up and figure out what I want.
No, I think that's a good point, Mike. And the nice thing about being a free agent in a free society is that it allows all of us to pursue our rational self-interest, right?
That's right.
And with that, we'll become more productive. And we don't need a bill that will actually constrain productivity and organic growth.
So how would you wrap that up? You'd say to Bernie, thanks, but no thanks, Bernie. I don't want you forcing a 32-hour work week on me. And I think we should have the ability to decide between us and who we trade with what that working relationship will look like.
Yeah, I would. I would say thank you. I think in his mind, Bernie Sanders is a well-meaning person. So I'd say thank you. But yeah, no thank you. And get rid of this bill. And also just get rid of the federally mandated 40-hour work week. Just let us decide our work week.
There you go. Let's get on a roll and get rid of these mandates one after the other.
That's right.
That might be for another episode. All the different ways that our government does employ the use of force through mandates, through rules, through permissions, through quotas, through tariffs. You know, we could go on and on and on. Lots of fodder for commentary, but I think this is a really good way to wrap up. I think, Mitch, you're making a fantastic point about let people decide what their values are, including how they want to spend their time. Let them trade freely. So no to Bernie Sanders. We don't need a 32-hour work week. Let people decide that on their own. You've been listening to the Defenders of Capitalism podcast, Capital Idea, with Mitch Whitus and Michael Williams. Hopefully you guys are getting something out of this. We really enjoy feedback. We're getting more and better feedback on different topics that you might listen to. So make it a point to subscribe to us, like, share, spread the good word of defending the only moral system known to man, capitalism. Thanks for listening.